story goes, I think I'm on yet. Test, yeah, here we go. Story goes of a man who won $25,000 on the TV show, I think it was Wheel of Fortune or something. And when the host asked him what he's going to do with the money, he said, it'll probably all go to charity. And of course, the whole audience, everyone was clapping. That's a pretty good thing, right? I mean, yeah, it'll probably all go to charity. And when they were all done clapping, the host walked over to the man's wife and said, "How does this sound to you?" And she said, "It sounds pretty good, because I'm Charity. My name's Charity." And anyway, how is it in your home with money? Now, before you get too worried, I'm not going to ask you to try to tell me how you guys deal with money. And this, I'm not sharing this morning. It's not a marriage seminar on money. But I've been thinking a lot on life recently in the last, I don't know, 3-4 months. Really been thinking on my purpose in life. And I'm not sure if I'm having like a midlife crisis. I don't think I am, because I have no desire to buy a sports car or a Harley Davidson or anything like that. And snowmobiles don't count, because I've had this since I've been 16. So I don't think it's about that, but it's more about just, what is my focus? What am I doing with it? Am I doing what God wants me to do? And I think if most of us, maybe all of us, if we were asked, what is our purpose in life, we would give the answer that to live for God. I mean, we're Christians. We gave our heart to Jesus, and he lives inside of us, and we're living for God. I mean, that's the cliche answer we would probably all give. And it's not a wrong answer. It's not a wrong answer. But I think it's more than just that. And I think that's what I've been really battling with in the last several months. So C.S. Lewis has a statement that he made: every faculty you have, your power of thinking or of moving your limbs from moment to moment, is given you by God. If you devoted every moment of your life exclusively to his service, you would not give him anything that was not, in a sense, his already. That's kind of been rocking me a little bit. And so I asked myself a question. So if everything that we do comes from God giving to us, what does it look like to give everything back to God? If everything God gives us, if everything we have, from cars, homes, clothes, money, family, friends, you name it, if everything we have God is given to us, what does it, and it's his, what does it look like to give that back to him? What does that look like? What's that? And that's what I've been battling with the last several months. So here at church, I was thinking through here at church of how there are a lot of people who don't just sit around. So here at church, I counted this last night, and I may have missed some, but I think I'm pretty accurate. I believe, if I'm correct, here at church there are 19, and I'm talking about people who come regularly, you know, who are coming regularly to church, 19 business owners or partners representing over 21 businesses. Pretty radical. You may ask, why am I bringing that up? And that is a fair question. The reason I've been processing this recently is I do not believe for one minute that God just random, or that we all just randomly congregate here on a Sunday morning. When I look at that ratio, and this is not talking different on somebody who is not a business owner or business partner. But when I see the ratio of business owners and business partners representing the businesses here at church, it tells me that God is up to something here. And even beyond the business owners, the people that are here, everyone for the most part, honestly, not bench warmers. You know, you have a ball team. Some of you here play on different ball teams. There are some people who are just bench warmers, and they will never be more than bench warmer. They're just glad to be part of a team. They're just glad to wear that jersey, and they know they're never going to play. They just come in every week whenever the game is, and they sit on the bench and keep the bench warm. There's nobody here like that, honestly. There's people here who have gone to Laos for years of their lives, people here in Haiti right now serving, people here have served at here in Lancaster City, Haiti, Edge Programs, Laos, New Horizons, Wedges Ministry, school. There are several teachers here this morning. People are involved, actively involved in God's kingdom, not bench warmers. There's a common denominator that I see. People are go-getters, not content to sit around. That's us as a church, and I believe that is not coincidence. God brought us here with a plan, with something in mind. You want to make a difference in the kingdom of God. You don't want to just exist. A lot of people that I talk with my work that I'm involved with, a lot of people, they just want to exist. They just want to watch the world go by and, you know, do whatever. They're not really making a difference. But people here are interested in making money to supply the needs for their family. But a bigger, much bigger vision is to be able to put back into the kingdom of God to further his kingdom greater. And that's one way of doing that is through monies, but that's not the only way. The other way is time. And everybody here is involved in that, which is amazing. Now, the one thing that we all need to... If you're in business, you have to end up with some of this. And even for the ones who want to go and serve in other countries, they have to have some of this to go do anything, right? And that's money. It's the green stuff. Or whatever color it is in Laos, or I'm not sure what color it is there. But we got to have the green stuff. So this morning, I want to look at what are riches, what are possessions, what is money? What do we do with that? And I think part of the reason I want to share with this morning is it's something that I'm grappling with right now where I'm at. So if you were to receive a gift of $25,000 right now, somebody will walk up to you and give it to you and just say, here, do with it whatever you want. What would you do with it? Would you be like, God gave it to me, it's a gift, this person gave it to me, it's, you know, I'm... pay off more of my house mortgage or buy a new truck or something or go on a nice vacation, put it in savings, give 10% to God, give it to the church, give all of it to the church. What would you do with it? I'm not going to ask you to answer that, but I want you to be thinking about that. What if your business has the best year ever and you might be normally used to netting, you know, 7-8% at the end of the year, and this year, with choices you made, things that happened, opportunities that came up, doors that you walked through that were open, that God led you through, all of a sudden, at the end of the year, we're here in December, and you're going to be showing a 20% net profit instead of a 7%, what are you going to do with it? Wow, great, God's blessing me. So that's where I want you to be thinking about. Where does it go? How do you work with that? A lot of the next verses, I probably have 20 or 30 verses here that I want to share. Most of them are in ESV and some are in NIV. We're going to start with Matthew 6:24. And I'm going to want some engagement here because I have a lot of verses to share, but I don't have the answers for what I'm talking about this morning. And I believe they're out here. Matthew 6:24 says, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. It's a verse that we've probably all heard many times. So when you hear that verse, what does it do to you? What comes to your mind? What does that verse mean? Cannot serve two masters. You will hate one, love the other. Devoted to one, despise the other. Cannot serve God and money. Or King James says mammon, and there's other different. In ESV, it says money. So what does that, what goes through your mind? Money can be a master. Okay. And you can't serve two masters, right? So you can't serve money and God. So how, what's it like to serve money? What's that look like? Anybody? Do whatever it takes to get it. That's actually a very profound statement there. So if you're serving money, you'll do whatever it takes to get it. What else? Anything else comes to your mind? So if your decision, whether it's, okay, so if your decisions are focused on whether you have money or don't have money, whether you have it or don't have it, that means money controls you, or it could be money controls you, which would then be a master. Okay, very good. Anybody else? One of the things that when I read that verse last night, the word hate stood out to me, and I said, wait a minute. That's a strong word. So I looked back into the Greek and how it was written, and in the context that it was written, it is talking about to love less. So in other words, for he will either love less the one or love the other. So he will either love God less and love the money, or he will love money less and love God. Like, that was an interesting concept to me, that it's that the hate is referring to about loving less. Matthew 19:21, it says, Jesus said to him, if you would be perfect, go sell what you possess and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Come follow me. When the young man heard this, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. And Jesus said to his disciples, truly I say to you, only with difficulty will a rich person enter the kingdom of heaven. Again I tell you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle and for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. Remember, years ago, there was a sermon that I sat under that was on those two verses only. So they took a whole morning on those two verses. It was very interesting, but I'm not going to do that this morning. But what is happening here? Is that verse trying to say that we're all supposed to sell what we have and give to the poor, and then we'll have treasure in heaven? And if we don't do that, we don't have treasure? What are your thoughts on that? Alan, we need the mic because it's going to be talking everything. It's like a mustard tree. He wanted the treasure.
Yeah.
Okay. What else do we get out of that verse? So she was talking about the treasure. What else are we getting out of that verse where it talks about the young man was asked to sell everything he had and give to the poor? Matthew 9:21 or 19:21. If you be perfect, go sell what you possess, give to the poor, you have treasure in heaven.
One thing I see in the passage that money was a big thing, and that there was holding him back.
So that will be his master.
I think so. In that passage, mm-hmm. I don't think possessions is a guarantee that it's your master.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good point. I think that is true. I wanted to bring that verse out because the verse before talked about money being a master. And so I think here's an example where to this young man, money was his master, and Jesus knew that because he could see right through that. And he said, because it's your master, he didn't say this, but he's thinking, if he's master, get rid of it and then come follow me. That's what he said, come follow me. In Mark 4:19, it says, do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it is gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven. So in this verse, it's talking about don't toil for wealth, but we're supposed to work, aren't we? Like, this seems to be contradicting itself. Proverbs 23:4-5 says, do not wear yourself out to get rich. Do not, this is in NIV. Do not trust your own cleverness. Cast but a glance at riches, and they are gone, for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. Proverbs 11:28, whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. It feels good to have a savings account. It does, and to have some money in it, by the way. You can have one and have no money, but it feels good, right? To have some stability, to have some backup, to when there's something that comes up, you're able to supply the needs. But if we trust in it, in Proverbs it says, his riches will fall. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall. Ecclesiastes 5:10, it says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. So do not toil to acquire wealth. Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money. And in 1 Timothy 6:17-19, it says, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. So here we're starting to see a little bit of a shift here. This is, Timothy was to be teaching people on this, to not fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches. Later on, Timothy, just a couple of verses later, actually just a little bit before that, in 6:6, it says, godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. So that goes back to what C.L. Lewis said earlier. It's everything is about God. God gives us everything, and so we are to give back. But then in 1 Corinthians 13:3, it says, if I give all I possess to the poor, and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. So does that mean as long as we have love, we can have all the riches? Where's the mic? Is that a nice cop-out, you know what I'm saying? You know, I have love, so it's all cool.
I believe it comes back again, who's the master? If God is our master and we love him, he will direct us how to respond if there's accumulation of wealth. Mm-hmm. But our focus is on Jesus, not on the wealth.
As the master.
So therefore, if we give all our money, and now we're thinking about ourselves, the motivator was the money, not Christ.
Mm-hmm. So the motivator needs to be Christ to make lots of money. That's not the point. That's not the point. That's right. Anybody else?
It almost feels like a contradiction for Solomon to be writing in Proverbs about wealth when he was one of the wealthiest people of his time or of all time. So, like, coming at it from what you were saying, Steve, like, obviously there has to be something in there about it being a master because it's written in Proverbs all the time. So, yeah, I don't know where to go with all that.
I'm going to hit on Solomon a little bit later here, but that's something that I've been processing myself a lot recently. Anybody else? Any thoughts that are coming through your mind so far, the last 20 minutes? I'm going to read about six verses from Proverbs. I'm going to go through them pretty fast. And this is something that, in growing up, is something that was kind of hammered into me. And I think with our heritage, a lot of us probably heard this. So Proverbs 10:4, lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. Diligent hands, this is Proverbs 12, diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in forced labor. Again in Proverbs 12, those who work their land will have abundant food. Those who chase fantasies have no sense. That's some blunt stuff there. Proverbs 14, all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. Again, Proverbs 12, the lazy do not roast any game, but the diligent feed on the riches of the hunt. Proverbs 13, a sluggard's appetite is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied. You know, we have been taught from young up that we're not to just sit around. We're supposed to get out and do something, get out and work, right? I mean, that's in our heritage, some of it. It's an awesome heritage. But a lot of times the verses go back to this, and you know, this is what, you know, Proverbs says, and nothing wrong with that. But I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, so what I need to do is just work, begin and work more, and then whatever happens, you know, if I get more money, then I'm responsible for it. How's that feel to you guys? What comes out when you think about that? But not being lazy and, you know, being diligent. And actually, Colossians says, whatever you do, do it heartily, as the Lord, not to the men. I've talked to one man who was a very wealthy businessman, and that was his verse that he went back to every time. He said, well, it says, do whatever you do, do it heartily. So I'm going to put 80, 90 hours a week in. I'm going to make my business flourish. I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to make it happen because God says, do it heartily. But it says, as to the Lord and not to the men, or not to men. So what's going through your mind?
The guy that did it 80 or 90 hours a week, was that the only thing he was called to?
I don't know. That's a good question. So you're saying there's people who are called to different things, that we need to recognize that, right? And miss another area. Okay. Anybody else?
What I'm seeing in Proverbs is a law. The world operates under law, how God designed it. And there's a law that if you are diligent, it produces. Just because a person is diligent, don't say you are serving the master of money. Mm-hmm. But there's a law that God created that be industrious, work to have for yourself and those that are you're responsible for. So I think we have to recognize that in Proverbs there, it's bringing out how God designed life to function. And then if we go according to that law, it works.
Mm-hmm. Whether you're living for God or whether you're not.
It's not consistent.
That's
correct. It's not connected to living for God.
Correct.
It's connected to understanding how the law of God was written, mm-hmm. and abiding by the law is not connected to the reality if we respect God or not.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So it's a law of what, if you do that, this is what's going to happen, whether you're Christian or not. And so when you think through that, it's very, very crucial, is it not, that our focus is at the right spot. We said earlier about, was that in the very beginning in Matthew 6, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve God and money. So there's two different focuses here. I'm going to jump into Ecclesiastics. And if you've ever studied that, it's kind of, when you start reading it, it kind of makes you feel down. I don't know if you all ever did or not, but nowhere does it say that Solomon wrote it, but with how it's written, he was the son of David. The person who wrote it was the son of David. He was a king, and he was very wealthy. It seems that Solomon would have been the only one that the shoe would have fit. So I believe that's who wrote it. And if you read it, the first 13 chapters are really like a negative thing. I'm only going to read some of the verses. In the first chapter, verse 1, it says, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of all vanities, says the preacher, vanity of all vanities, all is vanity." What's the word vanity? What does that mean? Pride? Meaningless? In this context, it means meaningless, like a vapor. I read that, and at first I was like, pride of all prides, what is this? And then I went back in the Greek, and that it's referring to a vapor, meaningless, insignificant, doesn't mean anything, has no point. And so, has no point of, or let's use the word meaningless, that's a good word. Meaningless of meaningless, says the preacher. Meaningless of meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless. Vanity is used 5 times in that context. So he's bringing out that everything is meaningless. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, another one comes. The earth abides forever. The sun also rises. The sun goes down. It hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south. The wind turns around to the north. The wind rolls around continually, comes again on its circuit. The rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. Like, it just feels like this is just a very negative low point of whoever is writing this, everything is meaningless. The wind goes around, but the sea never fills up, and what's the point? On into verse 12, says the preacher was king over Israel in Jerusalem. This is still in chapter 1. And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. Sounds like Solomon, right? He was always pursuing wisdom. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of men by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity or meaningless and grasping for the wind. He's just really going through it right now. I've communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness. I have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. So here he's saying, I've had the wealth. I have wealth. I've been pursuing wisdom. I've understood great wisdom. And I perceive that also is grasping for the wind. What's going on here? For in much wisdom is much grief. He who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Maybe he was having a midlife crisis. I'm not quite sure. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity or meaningless. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I search in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom. Going on in verse 2, or chapter 2, it says, actually, I'm going to start in verse 9. So I became great and excelled more all than all who were before me in Jerusalem, and my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all labor. This was my reward from all my labor. I looked at all the works that my hand has done and all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for wind. There was no profit under the sun. And I'm not going to go into all the rest of it, but if you keep on reading through it, he talks of just all the different angles. He's just dissecting his whole life and just tearing it apart. And he's finding nothing. Like, he's finding everything is meaningless. It's all vanity. It's grasping for wind. It's circling around. And it all comes down to in chapter 12, verse 13 and 14. He brings it all together. And if you want to go ahead and read it, you'd be more than welcome to. I read it a couple of times while I'm processing the last several months of my life. Verse 13, he says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter." Does anyone know what it is offhand? That's fine. So he says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments." He's bringing it right back. All his life, he was the richest man, right? Most wisest man. And he was in a point in time of his life when I believe he was processing, this is my point, what am I doing with all this? And he's saying all this stuff is meaningless, vanity, it means nothing. It's like wind, grasping for wind. He brings it all back and he says, "Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." So in the context of our jobs, of our businesses that we are leaders of, and money being entrusted to us, what are we doing with it? What is our focus? What are we striving for? Is it for the money? Is it for riches and possessions? Could be anything. I'm not going to put things out because each one of us has different things that we focus on. Is that our focus? Is that what we're focusing on? Or are we doing, like Steve said, focusing on God and being diligent and doing our job, and then things flow and then we're responsible for it, and as we are, we channel it to wherever God is telling us to. Fear God and keep his commandments is what it all came down to according to Solomon, spoken by the wisest man. So that's where I am at right now in this midlife crisis that I'm processing, is right into this verse right now. Fear God and keep his commandments. And I don't have anything more to give beyond that, but that's where I am right now. So I've given you what I have. Maybe later as I work through more of this on another level, I'll be able to share more, but this is where I'm at. So it starts with recognizing God, fearing God, and keeping his commandments, whatever they are, and walking it out. You can't steer a dead horse. You can't steer a horse that's standing still. I used to do a lot of quarter horse riding. We would do team penning and all that type of fun stuff. If your horse is standing, and you're sitting on the horse, you can turn his head as far to the left as you want, as far to the right as you want, and his body will just twist, but it'll stay right where it is. It won't move. If you don't want to, it won't move. As soon as that horse is walking, trotting, or galloping, and you start turning his head, his body will naturally follow wherever his head is going. If he's standing still, ain't nothing moving. It doesn't need to. But when they're moving, well, the way their body works, when their head starts turning, their body naturally follows. So when I think about that, following God, fearing God, keeping his commandments, it doesn't matter that I don't have all the answers right now in my business and in life, whatever, but as long as I'm moving, God's going to take and he's going to steer where he wants to go. And things are going to move. And that's where I believe people here are. Everybody here, I believe, is moving. You're allowing God to steer you, and you are moving forward. And you're not just sitting around. You're not bench warmers. People, you're You're moving, and God is using you. And I commend that in you. It's awesome. So join with me in my midlife crisis, I ask, in processing this. And I'll recover your prayers because it's something that I'm really working through right now. That's all I have, Dave.